And hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Race Department podcast. Last week's bonus edition doesn't count, but I urge you to check it out if you have not already. We spoke with the founder and owner of Race Department, Bram Hengelfeld. It's been another busy week in sim racing and motorsport. We have seen the start of MotoGP, IndyCar and F1. There have been updates for Assetto Corsa Competizione, Gran Turismo, Forza, Live for Speed, American Truck Sim, and of course the Razor Pack announcement for R-Factor 2, and it's got a confirmed price. So out of that lot, we're going to pick some topics and discuss. Joining me once again in the virtual RD studio are Paul Jeffrey and Davide Nativo. Good evening, guys.
Hey, hello. Hey.
So there we go. Look, I sound prepared there. I've actually done a little intro for you both, so to get us cracking away. Are we both well?
Yeah, good, mate. Thank you. Really good. Really happy to be here once again. So, yeah, thanks for having us, dude. Much appreciated. And hello to all the listeners.
Yeah, same. It's always fun to be here doing the podcast. And nice. Thanks
well,
for having me.
Without you guys, there wouldn't be a podcast. Because just hearing my voice, I don't think we'd get people downloading, to be honest.
Oh, don't underestimate you. Don't.
From my point of view, please don't fire those bullets in which I'm so tempted to respond.
Well, joking, mate. We're not allowed to swear on this podcast, so try telling that to Bram. So I had to do a bit of editing, but I don't know if people noticed. But
podcast was, "Hey Bram, well, how you doing?" "I'm all right, thank you." Beep. Beep.
I actually didn't go for beep, so I went for reverse the word. So, because a beep's quite noisy. I don't like beeps. But anyway,
there would have been a lot of them.
Yeah, there were. I think I had to edit about 5. It wasn't too bad. But anyway, let's crack on with the first news item this week. And Davide has chosen the news items this week because I was struggling, so I delegated. So thank you, Davide. The first item on the agenda is the Melbourne F1 race. So I think there's a few topics here so I'm going to chuck them in and we'll just go through each one. So were Mercedes sandbagging during the test? Ferrari, were they slow or were just Mercedes ridiculously quick? Team orders towards the end, was that the right call, or should Leclerc be given the chance to have a go at Vettel? Williams are way off pace, but they've come out and said they think they know what's wrong. How do we think McLaren did? Renault engines gone again, and then you've got Honda engines, which look solid right now in the back of the Red Bull, and obviously the back of the Toro Rosso as well. Haas and pit stops, oh my God. And then let's have a quick discussion about the rookies. So, Davide, do you want to kick us off with one of them?
Yeah, I start with the Ferrari versus Mercedes, maybe. Mercedes, for what I think, was definitely sandbagging during the test. It was very clear. And but at the same time, I think that they were also genuinely worried about Ferrari's pace because they were going strong. So they were maybe exaggerating at times. Famous Hamilton saying that they were half a second faster, but they were actually worried. I think Ferrari was low, but there is some saying that there was some kind of mechanical issue and maybe
what, on both cars? I haven't read that. Is that
well?
Both?
For Vettel, there is this rumor that there was a problem with his turbo, that there was too much turbo lag and he couldn't match the speed of other drivers. And in fact, at the speed trap, he bested 291 kilometers per hour, while Leclerc did 10 kilometers per hour more. And Leclerc was just held behind Vettel, so maybe he could have done a bit more. But yeah.
Well, I think Mercedes would definitely sandbag it in testing. Could argue, did they have a broken floor? I think it were interesting to see the noise that Mercedes made pre-season about how fast Ferrari were, and then just did what they always do. Came, absolutely annihilated everybody. Disappointing, but good for Bottas. Good for Bottas to take a win. Pleased to see that. Deserves it after his struggles.
Yeah, his message at the end was quite good, wasn't it? It was a big middle finger.
Good lad. And that's what you need. The guy, I'm trying to think how to put this without swearing, the guy needs to strap a pair on after his last few seasons. And I think, hopefully, the new evil man beard is the start of a new Bottas. And to be honest with you guys, the bloody sport needs it.
He's a lovely guy. Yeah. But yeah. I find him, I think I said this to you the other day, I find him boring.
Yes. Really boring. And I think his driving's boring as well. He's not got the flair of what is that right way to put it? He doesn't seem to have the front runner mentality a little bit. I think he's the kind of guy, he's like Perez. I think he'd be really, really good in a strong midfield car and he'd take it places that it can't go. But you put him in a top car and he's just not got that thing he needs to rub shoulders with the Hamiltons, Vettels of this world.
Well, he's got it because he showed it at the weekend, but consistently.
Yeah, Martin Brundle in his day were the best driver in Formula One, but his day didn't come often enough. And I think it's a little bit like that for Vettel. Pastor Maldonado won a race. On the day, you've got it, but for Mercedes, it works for him. Because they get to back Hamilton, he's a good number two, and that's a good combination for the team. But for the sport, if Mercedes are genuinely seven tenths a lap quicker than the competition, you need the two up front to be fighting each other. Otherwise, it becomes a one man show again.
Yeah, but at the same time, wouldn't it become Rosberg versus Hamilton again? We already saw something like that. I don't know.
As a fan, though, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I like to see the... I respect Hamilton as a driver massively. Not too fond of the man as a person, but I like him as a driver. But watching anybody walk away from the front unchallenged, it's just dull. But at least with Rosberg, he mixed it up a little bit. I don't particularly rate Rosberg, to be honest, but at least he mixed it up and there were a bit of controversy and there were a bit of racing. And that's what you need. A motor race can be made with two cars, but it can't be made with one.
Because when Hamilton talks about Bottas, you know, I get a feeling that he just wants him there because he's easy to beat.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just got someone to protect his rear guard, as where with Rosberg, that it wasn't quite like that, and he just wants him to stay around for that reason. But what I found quite interesting, you know, during the race, when Bottas finished the race and won, the cameras went to the Mercedes garage and Ocon was there. And you could tell it was blatantly a fake smile that was on his face. That was not a genuine smile. And in his head, he's thinking, damn, I'm going to be reserve driver for a little while yet.
Yeah. I think you're right, though, dude. I think Ocon thought he was going to get this drive mid-season. Bottas had another year like last.
You see it now, don't we? I mean, we haven't seen it in a big team like that properly before, but we've seen it in the likes of Toro Rosso and Red Bull don't mind chopping and changing halfway through the season. So, sorry, go on.
No, I was just asking you if you think that Ocon, even if we think that Bottas will continue his season as the previous season. So imagine Bottas doing in 2019 the 2018 Bottas. Do you think Ocon would be faster than him?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a better driver. Yeah, he's more aggressive. You see the relationship he had with Perez at what was Force India. I think he does lack a bit of maturity at times. Like, I think... You go back to last season, the Verstappen issue they had at Brazil, wasn't it, Interlagos? You could argue that was 50-50 on that. And again, I think, you know, both drivers should take responsibility, and there's a maturity thing there. And that's another thing, you know, Verstappen is looking like a better driver already this season. He just, the messaging that's coming from him. And of course, I think a lot of that's because he hasn't got Daniel Ricciardo, yes, challenging him anymore.
And that's the same thing that Mercedes are doing.
Exactly. Pierre Gasly, you know, he's just, he was just not on it. Absolutely down in 16th or whatever it was. And it just shows you that step up okay, it's his first race. And if you look at statistics, you know, other drivers that have gone to Red Bull and had their first race haven't done so great. You know, you could argue that it's just following that trend. But I don't see enough from him. I don't know what it is about Pierre Gasly that got him that drive.
He was the only one that was there.
Yeah, that's, but Kvyat should be in that car.
Should be in touring cars. Kvyat's got no place. He's had three chances. He's had his shot. Don't get me wrong. I think he'll do a job for Toro Rosso, but the whole idea of Red Bull and Toro Rosso is for the next champion, is to have the next Verstappen or the next Sebastian Vettel. And Kvyat's quite blatantly not that kind of driver. So Kvyat's got his seat and Albon, bless him, because they've got nobody left in the stable to pick from. And Gasly got it for the exact same reason.
Albon didn't have a great weekend, did he?
I don't think he did bad, considering that the very first time he ever sat in a Formula One car was day one of pre-season testing. So you've got to bear in mind, the guy is like massively underprepared. And so I don't think he did bad. He out-qualified Kvyat, which is no great shape.
So what I liked about him, though, is that he was honest and admitting that it was a step up, as where a lot of drivers go, oh, yeah, it's no biggie. But he was being honest and upfront about that.
He's got the look as Albon. He's got the look of somebody that will be a competent and solid midfielder. An Adrian Sutil of sorts, probably, I would imagine. Not a world champion, I don't think. His junior career wasn't particularly stellar. I mean, don't get me wrong, he had a good Formula 2 season last year. But it all smacks, the whole Red Bull thing to me smacks of, they've done too much chopping and changing, and they've run out of good juniors. And it's been painful. That's why, bless him, Hartley got a drive. They're paying the price for that a little bit now.
Could be right. So, Davide, what's your opinion on Leclerc's debut in Ferrari?
I think it was very good, very, very good. I mean, talking about now about Gasly and the other rookies, I think that Leclerc and Norris did a very good performance, because even if you are an F1 driver, switching to another car and with the regulations we have now, which means that basically you cannot drive the car outside of tests, official tests and practice sessions and so on, you don't have a lot of time to get in touch with the car. So I think that also that played a part for some drivers. And Leclerc and Norris showed that even in a new car, Norris for the first time, I think, in an F1 car, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he tested the McLaren last season.
Apart from tests, I mean.
Yeah.
And they were both very, very fast. Leclerc could easily have outrun Vettel, so it could be another place up. So they were both very, very, very good.
And I think Leclerc did have an off-the-track incident at the beginning of the race, but he settled down after that. Do you think he should have been allowed to challenge Vettel?
No. Merely racing point of view, but from a psychological point of view. Because Vettel, I think that in this moment, needs to know that he's still the driver number one. So I think that they held Leclerc back mainly for this reason, to don't make Vettel feel any pressure. But if he will be consistently faster than him, then they will start having him have a go at his teammate, and Vettel feel the pressure of the younger teammate.
So really, that's a really good point, that, Davide. That's a really, really, really good point. And astute observation.
Yeah, it's basically some sort of a change of mentality in Ferrari since Montezemolo came in, because when there was Enzo Ferrari, there was no number one driver. Both had the same chances, and Ferrari pushed them to go faster than one another, even if that meant having a crash. With Montezemolo, the mentality changed. There is a number one driver and a number two, which is supposed to back the number one up. So in this moment, that is the situation. But it could change very quickly. It depends on Vettel and it depends on Leclerc.
Right. Okay. So I'm just conscious of the time already because there's so much to talk about. So I want to kind of roll ball these ones up. So Williams, McLaren, Renault, Honda. So Williams, Paul, they've got some kind of fundamental issue with the car. They're saying they know what it is.
Yes, the car is garbage. That is the fundamental issue with the car.
Four seconds off the pace, if I remember rightly, for Paul, George,
where his name is. I've not looked at the times, but I would hazard a guess you could probably get around that sort of lap time in a top Formula 2 car. And that's a joke. For
I
a team like Williams, that's
a picture,
joke.
That kind of showed the lap times from 2017, 2018 and 2019, and the car is slower each year. It hasn't got faster.
Damn.
Yeah, it's the only one that got slower.
Yeah, which is a really scary thing, and poor Claire Williams has got to be sweating right now.
Well, I mean, any other team, she'd have been gone. But because obviously she's a Williams, and I can understand why Sir Frank Williams wants to keep a family name at the head of the team, but something's got to give. And I am a firm believer that it's not management that's that the person or the individuals that causes the problems. It's a whole team mentality. But you can't stay at the head of a sinking ship for too long before you've got to make that change. And I think Williams as a team have given Claire long enough now to assess her authority and bring in her people and do the things the way she wants it done. And quite clearly, it's not working. They've got good facilities. They've got good individuals. They've built strong cars in the past. They've got an exceptional power unit. And this season, they've got good drivers as well. Last year, we're a bit of an anomaly. Anomaly is the word I'm looking for. But yeah, I don't know. Something drastically needs to change at Williams.
I wonder if Claire is. I think she comes across as a really smart woman. And
obviously, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that she is the kind of person that won't be pushed. She's the kind of person that will make that decision herself and to leave on her own accord. Because I think you can kind of see that in her demeanor right now, is that I think she knows that potentially her time at the head of the team is coming to an end.
The problem is there's no succession plan. I mean, they brought Adam Parr in a few years ago and he fell foul of the Piranha Club in Formula One, so he went away. Then they brought in, who's the other person they brought in after Parr?
Smedley. They brought Smedley, they didn't know.
Yeah, they brought a couple of people in that were supposed to be taken over.
And then he brought Massa across
team.
With him, didn't he, from Ferrari at that time. And then he left towards the end of last season. They got Paddy over from Mercedes, and now he's suddenly
royally
gone.
Shattered. Yeah, he is a damn fine engineer. They were Coughlin and Paddy Lowe. Really, and Pat Fry as well, really, really, really good engineers. I don't care what anybody says, he was pivotal in Mercedes becoming the force they are now. It is not Paddy Lowe that's come in, doesn't know how to design a car, giving everybody crayons and then wondering why it's garbage. There's something bigger than that, and I think he's been scapegoated unnecessarily. I think that's a mistake. It's like a football team. You have a really good manager, you have a run of six bad games, and then you sack them. Don't work like that. They need time to mould things into the way to. I mean, if anything, Paddy Lowe knows how to do it right, so he should be able to see what Williams are doing wrong. And you don't change that in 24 months. It takes a lot longer.
I agree, but we have to move on. McLaren, for me, I was really impressed with Lando Norris. I thought it was a mature drive. McLaren definitely looked stronger. I think what really showed up is that, you know, when they were having the battle with the Renault engine in the back, and they were turning around going, our chassis is the fastest. Well, it obviously isn't. They've gone with a new design strategy this time round, and things do look to have improved. So they have made a step forward, but unfortunately for Sainz, the Renault engine gave up, and it's a bit disappointing. But Davide, you've already touched on Lando. I mean, Carlos Sainz in the McLaren, did he impress you in qualifying? Because he wasn't in the race very long.
Well, in qualifying, I don't know. Yeah, yes and no. I mean, it was a decent performance, but to be honest, when they were doing the qualifying, the McLarens, I was already more focused on Lando than on Carlos, because I was expecting him to do a good performance. So I was more looking at what Lando was doing.
Well, for Carlos, unfortunately, what happened was his Kubica got a flat from hitting the wall, which disrupted his final lap. So he didn't make it into Q2, wasn't it? As where Lando did, and then Lando made it to Q1, which is a huge achievement on his rookie season. Right.
Yeah.
Haas, pit stops, discuss. They've repeated it. Grosjean lost his front left. Apparently, they went to put it on. They struggled to get the nut on the thread. They got the wheel on, but then a few laps later, Paul, it's all come undone.
They made a bit of a Haas of themselves. Thank you very much. I'm here all week.
Have you been watching Will Buxton on the F1 channel? Because that's the kind of joke he would make.
He copied it off me. That's what I can say. F1 channel copies race department regularly. Don't worry about it. look, Toad Grosjean, he couldn't buy good luck if it was for sale. I feel sorry. I like Grosjean. Hand on heart now, I rate Grosjean highly. He does stupid things because he's trying so hard, because it means so much to him. But I do think a happy, confident, in-form Roman Grosjean is a formidable driver.
Agreed.
And I really, really hope to see that come to fruition. He's too good to do a Formula One career without winning. And I'd love to see him win and give a Bottas-like message to the naysayers. But, yeah, bad luck for kid.
Yeah, it is bad luck. And those of you that have watched the Netflix series, which we were going to discuss this week, but we'll discuss in 2 weeks' time, there is an episode where he features heavily in it, and he talks about that kind of mental issues that he's had in, you know, being strong and has to go and speak to someone. And like you say, I think he comes across as a really, really nice guy. He, like you say, he just can't buy good luck, which is a real shame. Right, so we were originally going to talk about F1 for 10 minutes. We've doubled that. So
things never go
to plan with these guys, especially with Paul Jeffrey there. You ask him a question, he just doesn't stop talking.
Dude, right, I don't know how to do short sentences. I can't say them. Yeah.
Right, so the second item on the agenda was, I had no idea this was coming, but Formula E is growing by each day, by each week, by each month. And Mercedes have announced that they are to enter Formula E, but not just Mercedes, if I remember rightly. Didn't Porsche also say they're entering as well? So yeah. I watched the bit of the last race. I watched it on iPlayer. I skip all the build-up and all that, and I just go straight to the race. I'm not a fan of the tracks that they use. They're street circuits, and it just seems a bit like carnage. First corner, oh my God. But I do think, you know, it's got a place in it, because I think we do have to look at other technologies. Though we spoke about this with Brand, didn't we, in the special podcast, and, you know, and is it about technology? Is it about trying to go green? I suppose is a really good question. But is it, what is the purpose of it? Is it entertainment? And, you know, and the technological breakthroughs, if you talk about the Gen 1 car, they had to stop off and change car, already haven't got to do that. And the last race result, for Bird, unfortunately, he was penalised because of the collision. So we've got lots to discuss there. So, Davide, let's start with you. Mercedes and Porsche, that's big news, right?
Yeah, surely, but not only for just those two, but also the other manufacturers that are getting into the sport. It's very exciting because there are a lot of very big names challenging one another now. And for what it means to race, if it's an entertainment or technological progress, I think that I listened to the podcast that you had with Bram, and when Paul, Jeffrey, and Bram were discussing about the subject, and I was thinking, oh, I want to say I want to say mine, I want to say my opinion, because
now's your chance, fella.
Yeah, in that podcast, basically, I think that the idea was that sport should be maybe more focused on the entertainment side. But I think that instead, racing especially, it's focused on the technological progress. So I don't think that electric racing is meant to replace ICE racing just because it's cooler or it's the new fashion or it's the latest thing. No, it's just because manufacturers have understood that electric engines are the future, and they need a way to have to be noticed by people to buy their product, but also at the same time to further develop and faster the technology. And racing, it's the fastest way to develop any kind of technology. So yeah, they're not as exciting at the moment. But it's the way it has to be right now. That's it.
I don't like the fan boost. I think that is a rubbish idea. I do like the Mario Kart thing where they run over that patch and they get an extra boost. Because it is quite tactical. Because, you know, I've watched other races before where the drivers have used that way too early. And that does make things quite interesting. But Paul, I don't know how many races you've watched, but I think those racing circuits are too tight. And it just seems like watching the AI on some games where it goes into a court. It's sometimes like an online private server for me. If I was a driver, I wouldn't be enjoying that.
No, I agree. I think Davide's pretty much summed up everything that I feel about Formula E. It's, from a technological standpoint, amazing. Really good. And that's the beauty of motorsport. There's not just one series. There's multiple series that have different aims. So to bring on electric technology, yep, beautiful. As a sporting spectacle, no. Got no interest in it. I have watched them all because I like to keep abreast of things. And it's, you're right, the tracks are too small. But it's a product of what it is. They've gone for formula cars, which by the very nature are fast, high-speed cars, but the technology is not there to run for long enough at a high enough speed to then go to a Grand Prix-style circuit. I mean, I've watched...
Didn't they just race in Mexico, or did they just shorten the track?
A shortened, narrowed-down version. But I've seen them at Season 1 testing. I saw them at Donington Park two or three times. So Donington Park's obviously a UK club circuit. It's large for big cars, and they look ridiculously slow on a big wide circuit like that. So they've had to go for, even though the city centre ones, they've had to go for a smaller, narrower, more confined track.
Do you think that's to make them look faster then?
Make them look faster, bring them closer to the people, but you can make bigger tracks. I mean, look at the old Birmingham Grand Prix track from back in the 80s. You can make fast street circuits, but they've brought them together smaller to make it look like a more dramatic experience, I think. But that just kills racing. It turns into bumper cars and it just becomes a little bit of a joke, I think.
Yeah, because in the last race, a car didn't make the third or fourth corner. And then another car came around the corner a little bit too wide, clipped him, and then the track was blocked.
It's just all that sort of thing, just bumping and boring to each other all the time.
You know, and Bird, unfortunately, you know, because you can't see that tip of that nose of those things either. So Bird's front of his nose was rubbing the car ahead, and then he got a puncture, and quite rightly, I think, Bird was penalised with a penalty. You know?
But you've got to do that kind of racing. And I mean, I've sat in a Gen 1 Formula E car, and there's not a lot of visibility, but I've sat in a Grand Prix car as well, and there's also not a lot of visibility. But it's the nature of the track. You can't run too wide into a braking or a deceleration zone, to use the correct terminology, and go too wide into corners like you can on a Sepang, for example.
You're right.
Because you've got to throw it up there. I can't use a phrase that's not got swearing in it. It's cack or bust. Shut your eyes, throw it up inside, and hope the other guy jumps out of the way or hit them. That's what it is when you've got a 90-degree corner that's a car and 3/4 wide. What you expect.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else to add, Davide?
No, I'll
just ask you because I've got nothing else to add. I think we should move on.
See, that's a way to build up. Get three petrol heads together and say, talk about electric racing. I've not got no to say. Sorry.
Yeah, it hasn't won me over. I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah, of course. Racing's racing, end of day.
Yeah, exactly. It is hard to watch for me.
They should have put them in a Renault Clio Cup and sent them round and just do the Renault Clio Cup but in electric, and the racing
touring car would have been so much better.
Tesla is developing some sort of touring car for racing. I don't know what point they if it's still going or not, but they were doing this. So,
but who needs a Tesla when you've got a bunch of massive SUVs on really small circuits? That's just as good.
Anyway, right. I don't know where that whistling's coming from, Paul. Right, okay.
That was hay bales whistling past. That was wind blowing through an empty corridor.
As you killed the conversation. Right. Yep. So third item.
You're saying SUV race is not sexy, Paul.
I'm moving on. third item for news item this week is W Series. So this is the series that is dedicated to trying to get women into motorsport, or, you know, not get, but get more women into motorsport. It's been since something like the 1960s, since there was a woman who took part in a Formula One race, which is a long, long time ago.
Incorrect.
So, yeah. Sorry?
1992.
Oh, sorry. Right. Okay.
The reason we know that is because she lost the drive. Giovanna Amate. Damon Hill took it in the death throes of the Brabham team.
Right. Okay. Which nicely leads us on to Brabham team Charlie Whiting, and obviously our thoughts and go out to his friends and family. Unfortunately, Charlie Whiting lost his life before the opening of the season. So may he rest in peace.
Yeah. Very sad news.
But yeah, so sorry. So it's 92. So I got my stats completely wrong there. I follow a couple of women drivers, and there's one who is from Kent in the area. Esme, her name is, and she's taking part in this kind of qualification series. So they've been going.
Are you
out.
Allowed within 300 yards of her now, or is that injunction being lifted?
Thanks, Paul. I only know about her because she still does. I no longer train her, but she trains at a gym that I used to train at. So that's how I came across her, because I follow someone on Instagram who is a personal trainer, and he trains her. And she is racing the Porsche Cup in the UK, but she's also trying to get into the W Series there's about three or four British drivers. There's Japanese. I had a look at their website. There's a YouTube video on there on what they're trying to achieve. But it got quite a bit of stick when it first got announced. There's obviously going to be lovers and haters for any idea that come out there. But, Paul, for you, is this a good idea?
No. I don't think you should split by gender. If you want to promote female engagement and involvement in motor racing, fund some females to actually get a drive in mainstream motorsport. Having a special series for people because of a certain background or gender is just, it's offensive, in my opinion, to be honest.
Okay, so my argument to you would be, watch a lot of interviews with women racing drivers, and see a lot of things on Twitter. A lot of them are either in your camp or they're for it. The ones that are for it tend to come out with things like, but I can't get sponsorship. Men are not willing to sponsor me, or businesses are not willing to sponsor me because I'm a woman. So you can kind of see in some respects why they've been forced down this avenue. But I also agree with your sentiment as well. I'm kind of in the middle. And the reason is that I wonder if this series is kind of like, because it gives women a kind of a path to racing that otherwise may not be there, then it might encourage more women to take part and start at the kind of the roots of, go-karting, etc., to get them into it. But then the W Series may then have to be ended because it's no longer needed. So it's to kind of like to kickstart things, is how I see it, maybe.
Do you not think it would be wise for the money that they're investing in it to get a driver academy? So the same 28 cohort of people that are, or whatever it is, that is racing in the W Series, use that funding to put them through a racing school or trials or some sort of assessment to pick out the finest and most potential 6-8 drivers or whatever, and then fund them in a proper championship so they've got the full backing, the car and the team, and then make a TV show out of it if you want to spread it to the masses so people can... Because the problem you've got is, if you've got a Formula W Series, that's still not going to expose it to females out there that are not necessarily aware that they can get into the racing scene. But if you put it on a Netflix show, like Formula One documentary was, everybody gets to see it. If the females are racing against the males in a male-dominated sport and they're performing, there's no arguments of, oh, how much value have you got against racing in a grid full of other women that have got varying degrees of skill and experience? If you put a female in a fully funded Formula 3 drive, let's say, if she then goes on and succeeds, there's no naysayer. You can't knock that because she's beaten her male contemporaries, counterparts. But if a woman wins the W Series, or the woman will win it, obviously, you could say, yeah, but she's got no competition because it's all a bunch of some professionals, some no-name drivers. And then she's still got to prove herself in a male category. Put them straight in there with backing and support and promotion.
I do get your angles. Like I say, I'm kind of on the fence there. My rebuttal to that would be, you know, people like Esme Hawkey, I think her name is, and other drivers that are taking part do run in other series. So it's not as if that, you know, they're putting all their eggs in one basket. They will. It's not like Formula One where Lewis Hamilton in between each weekend is trying to become a music star or a film star or a fashion designer. And because, I mean, we look at back in the day of the likes of Bruce McLaren and whatnot, you know, they would do race, they do F1 races, F2 races, and then maybe go do a bit of rallying and things like that. And it's kind of, I think it's more like that here. It's not like, you know, once you're in the W Series, you know, you are just dedicated to that. I do think you're right though. I think, you know, we don't know if this is happening, but I think a documentary behind the scenes, you know, filming as they progress and letting everybody know what's happening with the qualification, because there hasn't really been a lot about it. I've only seen...
No, very little.
I only know about the qualification because I follow Esme on social media, and that's the only reason I know about it. And then I checked out the website, and to be honest with you, the website could be a little bit better. I do get what you're saying. I also disagree with it as well. So, like I say, I'm kind of on the fence. I don't know if this is a great idea or a bad one. David Day, where are you in that spectrum?
I think that it could be both a good and a bad thing, because the bad thing, I agree with Paul when he says that it's not good to split females from males. They should be in the same categories racing one another, and it can be kind of offensive. But at the same time, I think that it could be a good thing because, as we were saying, women do not get a lot of sponsorships like men do. So, for example, I don't know, Formula One, there is maybe one spot, two spots available for a woman. while instead having a dedicated series means that there are 10, 20, 30 spots available, which means a lot more drivers can take part and show that they have what they've got. And at the same time, we were talking about the fact that there isn't a lot of coverage around this series, and that is a big problem because with sponsors, it's all about visibility. So there should be more so that these drivers can be noticed more and basically allow them to have a go at another series where men drive. So yeah, as Paul was saying, it's kind of offensive, not really the best idea, but at the same time, if this is the world we live in, I mean, we have to work with what we've got. So if it works for them to have a spot where sponsors can notice them better, then it's a good thing.
So there's only six rounds, the last of which is actually at Brands Hatch, which is close to me. So I might go and just out of interest, just go and see what I think, because, you know, unless I try, I don't know whether it's going to be any good or not. Apparently, I didn't know this, but there is a stand at Brands Hatch called the Desire Wilson stand. It's named after the first and so far only woman to win a Formula One race, but it was a non-championship F1 race.
Yes, that as well, the Aurora.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's only six rounds. I mean, they have, you know, practice sessions and then qualifying and race. And it looks like each location is slightly different. So Hockenheim, which is round one, they're doing Friday practice, Saturday qualifying, Sunday race. But at Brands, they're doing free practice one and two on Saturday, then qualified and the race on a Sunday, which means the race is actually on quite late. It's on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but it's in the middle of August, so it'll be pretty hot. Well, you never know with the British weather, but yeah, I'm intrigued. I am intrigued by it. I'm intrigued by the qualifying idea, and I guess time will tell whether it's a good idea. And like I say, Paul, I'm kind of on that fence, and it's poking up my jacksy because I can't come off it.
Well, can I ask you guys a quick question before we move on?
Yeah.
Why do you think it's so difficult for women to get sponsorship in motor racing? But I thought it would be amazing for brands. If you've got a woman that's genuinely, and I'm not saying just because they're female going to drive, if they're genuinely on a par with their male counterparts, that's a USP that no man can ever hope to have. So the promotion is amazing. If you've got a fast woman in Formula One, the coverage they will get is wild. I would be jumping all over that if I was a brand.
It's hard out there for women. You know, I've got a colleague of mine who works in sales, and, you know, and she goes to meetings which are full of men. And because she is a woman, they do look down on her. And she's open about that. She's open and honest and comes up with challenges. Now, I'm not saying that is the case here, but if you are a man, more doors do open for you. There's no getting away from that fact. We are very lucky with being three white men in life, because certain doors are open for you. For women, it is harder. I agree with you about, you know, sponsors should be looking to bring, and Williams did try that, didn't they, with Susie Wolf. Let's not forget, she was their test driver. Now,
yeah, I went to
Race of Champions, which she was at, and I got a selfie with her. I was very, very drunk at that point. As I was leaving, I got confused on my way out, and I ended up where the drivers were, and I was like, oh, Susie, can I have a selfie? Because it was freezing. It was in November, and I was freezing my nuts off, right? Literally sat there. We had a lovely day. Like, we were eating inside, but it was like a hospitality thing that we were doing, and it was great. And, I was freezing, but I had plans to go elsewhere, so I just ducked off. I was like, well, I'm going, I've got to go to London, go for drinks. And as I was leaving, I saw her, just got a selfie, then got back on the escalator and left. But she was 5 or 6 seconds slower than David Coulthard on a inside the stadium lap, which isn't a big, and I was disappointed in that because I was expecting more from her. So yeah, I mean, is, I don't know how on par women are. I know it's not like football, it's not like rugby, strength and whatnot doesn't come into it, but there's got to be potentially some stamina related to racing. I don't know. I'm not a professional racer, but it is hard for women out there in all areas and especially in things like motorsport.
You know what I was reading a while back? I was reading an article from the official aviation military channel, the Italian aviation. And they were saying, if I don't remember wrong, that after some studies, researches and things like that, women jet fighter pilots are actually better than men. They are more focused, I believe. It was very a very interesting article. And since right now, especially Formula cars are very much like jet fighters, it would be maybe something to think about for teams and sponsors. I mean, if the aviation says that they are better, there should be some truth behind it. So I understand that there is some prejudice behind how women are looked for when it comes to racing and things like that, but it's just prejudice and it's just been proven wrong on so many levels. So
yeah, I get, you know, I could talk about this kind of stuff. I'm, you know, I've got nieces who are lovely, and I just want to see them. If one of them wants to go racing tomorrow, I'd help them go racing tomorrow. I don't care what religion you are, what race you are, what sex you are. You know, everybody should have the same opportunities. And you know, and if it takes this series to help that momentum, this can only be a good thing. But I think it's got to be a short lived thing. It has to be, because I think it's to get that going, as I said before, kickstart it off. And you know, that might be 5-10 years, it might be 15, it might be 20, but going back to Paul's original point at the beginning, you know, you want women to be racing against men, and that's we want, right? Yeah, that's the aim of this. And so, yeah, I might have got a little bit speechy and, you know, on this, but I, you know, because I've got nieces, that's just my view.
Yeah.
And moving on to the main topic, because that wasn't 10 minutes.
That was 13, nearly 14. It wasn't too
really?
Bad.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I retract my previous statement. Timekeeping is good. Let us continue.
Right. So the main topic this time around is kind of spawned from the discussion that we had last time out. I hadn't really acknowledged that Joseph isn't here, but Joseph isn't here this week, unfortunately, but he got us onto this topic, so he would have loved this. Games and career mode. So we were speaking about Toka, race driver.
Good pronunciation.
Thank you very much. I made sure I got that right. And we touched on it with Bram again last week about how you get into a story mode, in that particular one, and you're racing against a Scottishman, wasn't it? And competing, and you're trying to avenge your father's death. And we kind of started to think, well, why aren't there more games like this? And you know, when you're sat there on the toilet doing your business, and I was thinking about this, and I think the reason, I think this is just the end of the discussion, it's going to be really short, is the reason they don't do it is because the amount of work that's involved. So you've got to write a script, you've got to do voice acting, you've got to do the animation. I guess Formula One and Codemasters do it a bit. There's a bit of that. There's interaction where you sit down and you do the development structure, but you also do interviews and things like that. And there's a lot, but I guess that might get more involved over the years, like it already has done from Codemasters. But should more games fundamentally have a story mode to get you into it? Or I guess you wouldn't expect it from games like Assetto Corsa or R Factor 2. David Day, what's your take?
My thought about the subject is close, I think, to what Joseph was saying last time, because he was saying that he needs something to keep him focused, and so when there is a career mode or something like that, it works great for him. And it's the same for me. I am not very disciplined. How is the pronunciation on that?
Yeah, you got it right the first time. Disciplined.
Okay. Not very much when it comes to sim racing or games in general. So it can become not boring, but I can be distracted very easily. Well, instead, when I have special events, challenges, careers, campaigns, I focus more and get more out of the game or sim in this case.
Okay, so there's two things here, isn't there? There's a story mode. If we talk about Toku as kind of the game we reference a lot, yeah, where you had a story mode and you played a character. But then I guess you've got the other flip side of that, where you've got like the likes of Gran Turismo, Project Cars 2, where you work your way through a series. I guess that's more of a career mode rather than a story mode. So I guess we've got two things here.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit the same also in flight sims. There is the career and there is the campaign. Two different things, as you were saying. One more cinematic, with cinematics, things like that. The other a bit more linear, but still... means that you have to go through a certain path.
See, I'm the polar opposite to yourself, Davide, and Joe, in terms of my taste. I hate career modes. I dislike significantly anything that's not driving the car on track. So, I mean, I do ask for a championship mode where I can set a number of AI and a number of tracks and a point structure and everything, obviously, so you can fight for a title if you wish. But the whole cinematics and the progression structure and limiting you to certain classes and cars until you move up and the fake promotion and contract signing, not for me at all. I can see why it's got some value in more arcade game, if you like, type piece of software. But no, the be-all, the first, the last and the everything is... driving the car against other cars out on track for me, pure and simple. Can't cope with it. Each to your own, and if people enjoy that, then nothing against that for myself. But no, not for me. It turns me off massively.
I see.
Okay, well, I think that's the end of that then, isn't it?
I've killed another conversation. I'm doing well tonight, aren't I?
Yeah, I mean... For me, again, I kind of see the value in both. There's me sitting on that prickly fence again.
But... Hey, you're doing a lot of that. You're tired. You're doing a lot of sitting down today, Paul, on middle ground.
Yeah.
Paul, I think that you were raising a good point initially, because the other Paul was saying, I don't like it, I don't want it, it doesn't add anything to me. And I was thinking while he was talking, but yeah, we can have something like, for example, the Project Cars franchise, where you have all the cars available since the start, but at the same time, also a campaign for who wants to do it. But you were raising a good point in the beginning that these careers and campaigns mode require money and developing time. So it can become detracting from the development of the title itself. So that's kind of interesting, I think, to discuss.
Yeah.
Is the campaign or career mode, how do you want to call it, worth it in a simulation? Or in the end, the people like me and Joseph are just a minority, and what we want, yes, it can be understood, but it would detract from the theme.
I think it's... Paul, go on, mate, carry on.
You still have campaign modes, though, like in the sense, like you go and win a championship, so you, you know, you start in a Renault Clio and then you might move to Formula Ford. I think that's kind of what, you know, the likes of Gran Turismo and Project Cars are aiming for. And as you mentioned, David, the odd special event here and there, but I guess they're more arcadey rather than sim, which is what Paul was referencing before, where maybe they do kind of suit the arcadey, because the people that play potentially the arcadey more game-based games are those that are coming from the likes of Call of Duty and other games out there that have a story mode to them. So that's what they're looking for in their racing games as well, perhaps. With the more sim-based games, I'm with Paul. I think there needs to be more games where it's easy to set up a championship, because you look at some games and it's an absolute mission. I just want to set up 6 rounds of 20-minute races and race against the same class. I don't want to be sat there for an hour trying to set it all up because it's a pain in the bum. But yeah, I guess I see the need, and I've got fond memories of those kind of story modes / career modes, but these days I don't have the time to dedicate to it.
I think it depends what you want out of a game as well. I know I used to be, when I very first started modern, so to speak, car racing on computer, I used to enjoy Forza and the Gran Turismo series back in the day. And that felt at the time, and I think it's the same now, it had a culture about it of car collection, car modify. Almost, there was a lot of activity away from the circuit that people really enjoyed. And you get it in things like Steam games on PC now, where people enjoy getting the achievements and merit badges. I could not care less about that if I tried. It's just the product of going out on circuit and racing that I'm interested in. But I think it depends on what you want from a game. The idea of grinding through Gran Turismo, for example, and getting some credits and souping your car up into the next class and then buying the latest and greatest from Ferrari or something really does it for folks. And that's fantastic. That's totally for them. But for me, I want to be Jim Clark in his Lotus 49, and I don't want to modify my car and put extra parts on it and change its classification. I'm not interested in that. I want to know, for me, how close I can get in consumer available software and hardware. Anyway, I want to know what it feels like to drive an Aston Martin Vantage GT3. I don't want to know what it feels like to drive an Aston Martin Vantage GT3 with a Chevy big block V8 planted in it. I don't care. I just want to know what the real drivers feel as much as I possibly can. So I think it just depends what you want out of a game, really. And there is a place for both. But I do, touching on what Davide said, is a perfect point. It would worry me if a lot of time, effort, resource and finance was lavished on a career mode at the detriment to the physics. And I think that's probably why you don't see these sorts of things in R Factor, in Race Room Racing Experience or Automobilista or whatever, because it's a different market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're. I think we're
That's
right.
Not another conversation I've killed, is it?
Well, yeah, I think it might be. You want to run tonight, aren't you? Yeah, no. I think you're right. It's. I don't think it's a hard and fast rule, is there? And I think that's the kind of the point. It's a saying that I've said quite a few times previously already on this podcast, and we're only 3 episodes in plus bonus. Please do go check them out. They're all very, very good. you've got to cater for all the different people out there. And it kind of, again, links back to our conversation around arcade games being the gateway and getting people hooked and getting them in. And I think that's where these career modes / story modes probably are best suited
Just to throw something into what you were saying there, Paul, you're absolutely right. And this is probably not a massively popular opinion, but I think we often forget, we as in the royal we of sim racers, that we are a niche within a niche. Sim racing is not driving games. It's, and I hope, I mean, I'd love it if the likes of Studio 397 could sell 10 million copies of R-Factor 2. And I'd love it for Marcel and his team and to make the fortune out of it. But I hope it never gets to that, because the games like R-Factor 2 are never going to be mainstream, because they're too serious and hardcore to be to sit alongside a Forza or a Forza Horizon or a Project Cars 2 even. But I love that because that's what I want. And I think if they start to cater to a bigger and wider audience, that dilutes the aspect that I enjoy too much, and that is the as close to real as you can get. And I'd prefer the resource to go into that aspect, but have things like Project Cars that teeters a little bit more onto the casual side of things, and Forza that makes no bones about the fact it is a casual game. Keep them all a bit like the Formula E discussion. I don't want Formula. I'm happy for Formula E to be Formula E, but I don't want it to take over Formula One. And it's a bit like that with sim racing. The hardcore automobilista, where they simulate the bloody flight paths of the aeroplanes that fly over the track to be exactly the same as real world. I need that sort of thing in my life, and I'd be very sad if a day came where that disappeared and got lost in the razzmatazz of more accessible and gamey type games.
I think that's something that might work very well with Sims, because I agree with Paul when he says that, for example, an R-Factor 2 or an automobilista do not really need a campaign or a career mode, and I perfectly agree with that. But something that it may work in all Sims, the kind of special events that you have, for example, in the first Assetto Corsa. Why? Why do I say that? Because they are easy to implement from the dev side. You don't have to do any voiceover, cinematic, anything like that. But at the same time, it provides something to look for people like me, for example, that want challenges to go through. And at the same time, as I was saying in one of my articles, they do also help you get more from the sim itself. Because when, for example, a sim asks you to drive, I don't know, any car, let's say a Lotus 49 at Monza, below a certain lap time, you really... And the lap time must be, of course, a competitive one for this to work. And so, given this example, you really have to understand how the car works, learn maybe how to make a specific setup for it, how to drive it. Get more out of a car that maybe you wouldn't drive because you do not think about it. It's not your type of car. And instead you do it to do the special event. And maybe you will not touch it ever after, but you have learned to drive it to the absolute max to do the special event. And I think that that kind of implementation can work in sim racing. And it works also to get more out of the sim you're playing.
I just wonder if that would, going back to the point I think we've already made once or twice now, that would potentially detract from the content itself. I have bought Project Cars 2, and I played it for all of about half an hour, because, you know, whilst I do like the sometimes to work through a series and then open up other doors and then go and do a special event. And it was a particular special event. And the car is not drivable because it's just not a very good game. And that's a real shame. And looking at the information online, some cars, you know, they feel like they're not touching the track, and others have really well done. It just seems to be a real mixture of a bag. And maybe if they kind of stripped it back, they would have more time and development. And I think, again, on what Paul said about R-Factor, you know, if it did become more mainstream, it likely would dilute the product. because they'd have more voices that they'd have to answer to, and more demands. I mean, already, you know, us sim raising folk are waiting for the new UI. We want these add-ons. We don't want to pay for this. We do want this. We don't want that. That's crap. This is great. You know, God, if you multiply that by millions, which is probably where Codemasters sit, which would explain a lot about their game, is that it's hard to please everybody. And where do you draw that line? But I think it definitely has a place, but it's probably not for the hardcore games.
Yep, that's a fairly good summary in my humble opinion as well.
Okay, all right, great, excellent. Well, we'll start bringing this to a closer. This is going to be the shortest podcast I think we've done so far. To be honest, though, there are only three of us to give our opinions, which is going to have an effect, and hopefully Joseph can return in 2 weeks' time. So, let's talk about your YouTube videos, Twitch, and anything else you've got going on, Paul.
Yeah, cheers, mate. I've had a little bit of a hiatus for various reasons from making videos, but we're now back in full swing, so do keep hold of your subscription, or subscribe if you haven't already, to Twitch and YouTube. This week, today, on Monday the 18th of March, I've looked at the Leo Badner SimSteering 2 direct drive wheel. So done a little product review on that one.
Really, I think in the subline, I think you've already given how you feel about it away, so no one needs to watch it because it says superb direct drive wheel. What are you doing? Where's the clickbait? Oh, where's the clickbait?
What you've got to do is you've got to watch it for the excellent video presentation quality, man. That's what it is. No, it was a real sweet wheel.
If you watch other people, though, you're not going to believe this. This is what you should do. You've got to change your strategy. Right. What else you got coming up?
Well, Wednesday, the 20th of March, I'm driving the 964 Porsche in a token drive from Race Room. So that's some upcoming content. We've done the 962 Group C car already. So this is the Porsche Carrera Cup from the 90s car. Really nice car. Really enjoyed that one. So, yeah, catch that one. And then probably most exciting, on the 22nd of March, I'm driving the MCR Sports 2000, the Riser Studios bundle DLC in R-Factor 2. So we're at Ghiapuri for that one, for a little talk and drive. And, yeah, tune in for that, please, everybody. That's an interesting first look, and there will be more.
And then I noticed something different on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm going for two-wheel glory. I've not recorded it yet. I've not fired it up in earnest yet, so that could be a disaster.
Just out of curiosity, how will you be playing that? Via controller, keyboard, joystick?
It'll be via Xbox One wireless controller that came with the Oculus Rift set.
Right, okay.
So I'm looking forward to getting back into controller land once again.
I'm genuinely intrigued at what you think of that, because I do think there hasn't been a decent motorbike game for a while.
No, there hasn't, and that's why I think it needs a little bit of... I kind of missed it when it first came out, so really, I should have done this a while ago on launch, but it is a very good piece of software. But like everything, you got used to a wheel and pedals. Somebody needs to bring out a mainstream steering wheel for bikes, if you know what I mean.
There are a couple of peripherals out there. They're just not very well known about, and they're not exactly cheap either, I don't think. So,
and it makes it hard because you need the lean in the bike. It's getting your knee down in the corners. It's very difficult to simulate that in a home environment without getting a full on bike type rig. But it's interesting to see how Milestone have gone and made it appropriate for controllers. Because controller games, Davide is the guy for this, definitely, because he races with the controller. Some are really well optimized for using a controller, and some are absolutely awful.
I always thought the MotoGP ones weren't very good. I don't know how they are now, but I think
they're getting better. Yeah, they're getting better. And Milestone, don't forget, have been massively prolific with bike games recently. So they've really worked hard at trying to achieve that good balance. So, yeah, I'm not going to say too much because it'll spoil the video, but if spoiling the video already by me doing it. But, yeah, interesting to see.
True.
Thank you, my friend. interesting to see a move to two wheels. So I'm looking forward to seeing what people think of that.
Okay, great stuff. Excellent. Right, before we go, quick reminder, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. Search for Race Department and you will find this. So I generally post on Twitter every so often. I might find something amusing and retweet it. I retweeted something the other day where somebody done a picture. I think it was the F1 Circus account where they did an illustration where sandbags were being removed from the Mercedes car, which I thought was absolutely, nice. Absolutely genius. So, yeah, check us out on there. If you've got any feedback, any questions you want to know, you know, any topics you want us to talk about, then hit us up, let us know. And also you can tell us on the forum. So check out the podcast section of the Race Department forum at racedepartment.com. Right, thank you very much to Davide for joining us. You've been excellent as ever.
Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. It's good to have the Italian stallion with us. got it in there again. And thank you very much to Mr. Editor of Race Department, Mr. Paul Jeffrey.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, as always, for listening in. I just want to say, yes, because I want to carry the conversation on. I've seen a few comments where people have said, oh, thanks for doing this podcast and listen to it in the car to and from work and whatever. That's humbling and cool, really cool that people do that on the way to and from work. So thank you for listening and thank you for your kind words. It means a lot to us all, I'm sure.
Yeah, it genuinely does put a smile on our face and I've only seen good comments about the bonus podcast we did with Bram last week, and which has surprised me that it hasn't had as many downloads as our previous episodes. So if you're listening to this and you haven't checked it out, please do so, because it's really, really insightful. And Paul and I loved talking to him. It was great to learn more about Bram himself and about the site that we all love and know, which is Race Department. So that brings this to a close. I hope you've enjoyed another episode. This is episode 3. That's 4 in total, including the bonus. I've been Paul Glover. This has been the Race Department podcast. Cheerio.